In the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
We're talking on Keeping the Faith this afternoon with Frank Dimmock, who's been living in Malawi in Africa. How's the weather there compared to what you've been experiencing here?
Well, Malawi's known as the warm heart of Africa, so it's much, much warmer than here, Steve, I guarantee.
We're going to be talking about health issues in East and Southern Africa. How did you get involved in these kinds of issues, Frank?
Well, I responded to a call to missions nearly 30 years ago after I had graduated from university and volunteered with the Presbyterian Church to go to Africa in missions. And ended up in what was then Zaire, now the Democratic Republic of Congo, working in an urban health center, and realized during that experience that this is what I wanted to do and this is what I was called to do as a career in missions.
Now, what university were you? Did you graduate from?
I grew up in North Carolina and graduated from North Carolina State University in Raleigh. After that brief volunteer experience, came back and did public health training at Tulane University in New Orleans, did some further graduate work in public health at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.
So your specialty is public health, and what did you do then in your first assignment after graduate work?
I was asked to go to the tiny country of Lesotho in Southern Africa to direct a community health effort there, in the catchment area, the population around one of the mission hospitals.
And after that?
Well, that led to a lot of other things. After doing that for about 4 years, I was asked to be the administrator at the hospital itself, and that was a different kind of challenge administratively, and enjoyed that for a couple of years before being reassigned to the country of Malawi, where we've been since 1992.
Now, tell listeners about Malawi. What kind of a country is it?
Malawi is a small country, about the size, slightly larger than Illinois, about the size of the state of Pennsylvania, with 13 million people. It is landlocked, located between Mozambique and Zambia, to the south of Tanzania, in sort of east southern Africa. It was formerly known as Nyasaland, and was one of the federation under British rule of northern and southern Rhodesia and Nyasaland. Became independent in the early 60s and has been called Malawi.
Now, there's a beautiful lake in Malawi.
Absolutely. The third largest lake in Africa, Lake Malawi, is the southernmost part of the Rift Valley that comes through East Africa. It is a long and large lake, about 360 miles long and very deep. It has tides. It is a freshwater lake and a great source of fish and a great resource to the people of that area.
How many other natural resources are there in the nation of Malawi?
Very few natural resources. There is a bauxite deposit, and they're wondering about, they're exploring for natural gas. The forests of northern Malawi are a great resource, but it is a pretty densely populated country, about 223 people per square mile.
And very poor.
And very poor.
One of the two or three poorest countries in Africa most years?
I would say so, particularly because they have not been engaged in conflict like many of the other countries that would be in that same group, Sudan, Ethiopia, Angola, and so forth, would have been post-conflict countries. Malawi has been at peace.
Now, I know you have a new assignment, but tell us what you have been doing in Malawi since 1992 as a U.S. citizen there on a mission project for a Protestant Christian church.
We went to northern Malawi in 1992 to work as what was called a health coordinator. The Presbyterian Church of Central Africa, which is the partner church with the Presbyterian Church USA, operates 3 hospitals and 9 health centers in northern Malawi. And my job initially was to coordinate the activities of those hospitals and clinics to make sure that they're well-staffed, that they're well-equipped, that they're funded, that they relate to the Ministry of Health and other health activities in the country.
Where does the funding come from?
A variety of places, generally donor funding. There is a fee for service for many of the services that are provided by those health facilities, but it is far short of sustaining the health services. So that means there's a dependency on foreign donations, mostly from churches and organizations abroad.
And there are churches in this part of Illinois that have been supportive of your work and other works in Malawi. I know the First Presbyterian Church of Champaign, of Urbana, McKinley Church, many others in this presbytery and in this synod, the states of Illinois and Indiana. Also from Marion, Illinois, the Marion Medical Missions. Tom Logan has worked with helping get fresh water in some of the villages. I know he's been a guest on this
Absolutely.
On this program a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us why that's so needed. The people are poor. Does the government have resources in Malawi to be concerned with its citizens' health?
The government has few resources. Really, they are also very poor. They are heavily dependent on foreign assistance as well. And I think much of the development aid is based on charitable donations from partners in North America and in Europe. And there is a great connection between Malawi and Illinois. As you said, a number of congregations in this Champaign-Urbana area, as well as the Shallow Wells Program and other initiatives out of Indiana that have been very supportive of the work in Malawi.
When you first went to Malawi, what was your impression of the people?
People were very friendly. Its distinction as the warm heart of Africa is not just for the weather, but in fact for the hospitality. The people there are very friendly and very warm themselves, and we felt welcomed. We were somewhat shocked by the level of poverty, the extreme poverty and chronic poverty that it does exist. And yet it was an inspiration to work among people whose faith has really sustained them and has helped them to cope in the midst of the poverty and the adversity.
People who have gone to Malawi from this country have often come back saying that the people are very generous. They have very little, but what they have, they're so willing to share.
Absolutely. That's what we found as well.
When you began your professional work in Malawi after being the being a health coordinator for these 3 hospitals and was it 7 health clinics as well? In addition, how long did you do that?
We did that for a term of service, which is 4 years, from 92 to 96 in northern Malawi. We were there and doing that work. And then in 97, was reassigned to work at a national level, really, with all of the 3 Presbyterian synods, coordinating the health work of 5 Presbyterian hospitals and 20 clinics. So my region expanded, and I was also asked at that time by the Presbyterian Church USA to become a regional health consultant for East and Southern Africa.
Now, we haven't talked at all about your family, but I know that you're married. Your wife Nancy, you and your wife Nancy have how many children?
We have 8 children, 2 by birth and 6 adopted children have really blessed our lives over the years.
And are those children from Africa that you adopted?
5 of the 6 children were adopted from Africa, 2 from our time in Lesotho, they are Basotho, and 3 Malawian children.
How old are your biological children at this point?
Well, our firstborn is the oldest. Nathan is 20, will be 21 this year. And our daughter Jessica is the number 3 child, and she's 18.
And how old is the youngest that you've adopted?
2.
Two.
So the range is from 20 down to 2.
And did you and Nancy anticipate you'd be doing this when you went to Africa for the first time? You'd be adopting so many children?
No. We went with an open mind and an open heart as newlyweds when we moved to Africa in 1985. And we had discussed early in our married life the option of adoption, and we're certainly open to that if the Lord put that in our path.
How did you and Nancy meet?
That's an interesting story. In fact,
it's probably two stories, but she's not here to tell her side.
Right, to tell her side. When I first went to Africa as a young volunteer to Congo, I lived in the house that she had grown up in. My wife is the daughter of Presbyterian missionaries who were in Congo for 23 years, and my wife had been born there and grew up there. And when I went as a volunteer, I lived in the house that she had grown up in. There was another family in the same town who knew her as a child growing up, and the wife of that family suggested that if I ever had the opportunity to meet Nancy Miller, that she thought it would be an ideal match. Well, that was in 1979, or 78 rather, and then in 1983, I was back in the States doing graduate work, and I went to a symposium on world hunger, and Nancy Miller was one of the speakers, and she was talking about Congo Zaire. And in fact, it was the same person whose house I had been in Central Africa 4 years earlier. And so we sort of met that way, and there were some other matchmakers along the way, but we realized that we had so much, so many interests in common that we really felt it was predestined.
We're talking on Keeping the Faith this afternoon about East and Southern Africa, particularly health issues there, with Frank Dimmock. Now, do you describe yourself as a missionary?
I do. That term is no longer used frequently. We're called mission co-workers, but it's the same principle of being sent by a denomination here in the U.S. to serve overseas.
But the mission co-worker phrase would indicate that you're working in cooperation with the people where you find yourself.
Exactly. And okay. I think that's one of the reasons for that shift in terminology is mm-hmm. that we are working with, not for, and we're working alongside of colleagues in the process training others to do the work.
Listeners to this program know that you may call in with comments or questions. Let me give the phone numbers so that people can do that. Anywhere the program is heard, including on the Internet, if you're in the continental U.S., you may use a toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL, the call letters of the station, of course. In Champaign-Urbana, there are several lines you may reach by punching in 333-9455. So in Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL to talk with our guest today, Frank Dimmock. I see we have a caller already waiting on line number one. Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hello. I remember hearing about Malawi in terms of the fight against AIDS there, and I can't remember if Malawi was held up as an example for other countries to follow or if there, things hadn't gone as well there as had been hoped. I was hoping you could talk a little bit about that, and I'll hang up and listen off the air.
Thank you for the call. Thank you for the call. That was definitely one of our topics for today, HIV/AIDS. Frank?
HIV/AIDS is a very serious problem in Malawi, as it is throughout the region, and it has been a priority problem for the government as well as for churches and NGOs since the mid-80s. It has been a serious setback in terms of development, in terms of health, and the economy as well in the country. The adult prevalence rate of HIV/AIDS at the moment is around 14%. That would be about 14% of the population between 15 and 49 years of age would be infected with the virus. Now, there are increasing numbers of those who are infected who are accessing treatment that can prolong their life. Antiretroviral treatments becoming more and more accessible and available through government as well as mission hospitals. But it is still a major challenge to the nation of Malawi and to the health services of Malawi in particular to address HIV/AIDS.
Now, you, in your current position, are dealing with a much larger area, even the Malawi. How far does it extend?
My area covers from Ethiopia in the north, also southern Sudan, Kenya, parts of Tanzania, Malawi, Zambia, Mozambique, and Lesotho in southern Africa.
And how does the situation with HIV/AIDS in Malawi compare with the other nations you have to also be concerned about?
Well, during the 25 years or so of the epidemic, there has been a shift in prevalence rates from the Uganda, Eastern Congo, Western Kenya area to the south. If you map the epidemiology of HIV/AIDS in Africa over time, you can observe a movement in prevalence from East Africa to Southern Africa, where the highest infected countries are at the moment. The four countries with the highest infection rates are Botswana, Lesotho, Swaziland, and Zimbabwe, where over 20% of the population, up to 33% of the population, are infected.
So in terms of public health, what do you and your colleagues, how do you try to respond to this pandemic?
It's a huge challenge. And the response is multifaceted, from information, education, and prevention programs to care and support of those who are infected and certainly affected, to treatment programs, including voluntary counseling and testing, and provision of antiretroviral drugs. So the whole range of programs are provided by Christian health facilities and other providers.
Do the Christian health facilities you work with distribute condoms?
It's very interesting, and it does vary from country to country, from provider to provider, depending on the mandate that's handed down from the church proprietor. In most cases, however, at a health facility, condoms can be prescribed in cases of discordant couples as a means of protection, in cases where there is obvious sexual activity and a condom is the best method for preventing infection, then our practitioners, nurses, and doctors will prescribe condoms, and that's acceptable.
We have another caller, again on line number one. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead.
Hello. My question is regarding the AIDS issue as well. I was involved in a project that involved home care kits for people that were trying to care for someone ill, and it involved gathering some materials like sheets and towels and a big assortment of things. But it seemed a little bit haphazard in trying to run all over town and gather the stuff up and then deal with the shipping. Are you recommending a way for people to support this type of care that might be a little more streamlined? And I'll just listen on the radio and hang up now. Thank you.
Thank you for the question. How can people be responsive to help deal with this horrible situation?
Well, I think one of the strategies behind having people here in the U.S. be involved with sort of a hands-on preparation of kits like that was, in fact, to encourage that involvement and interest. Home-based care kits are now available in most countries in Africa, available through the normal procurement system where drugs and medical supplies are available. And there is a, sort of a standardized list of home-based care kit contents that has been internationally circulated. So the same materials are available in most countries at a cost, a subsidized cost, to HIV/AIDS programs and to health providers in country. But like I say, I think the intention was to encourage awareness and local involvement, hands-on kind of involvement here in the U.S., and hopefully it did do that. It raised people's awareness of the kinds of items that would be needed to care for someone who's chronically ill, terminally ill in their home. And I think it did accomplish some of that objective.
Was the hope, however, that it would lead to other kinds of support, financial support, personal involvement?
Well, I think it's a way of encouraging personal involvement in a relationship, sort of in a physical sense, that is more meaningful, perhaps, than just raising funds or asking for a donation. It's not as personal if you're just writing a check as it is if you know that the items that you're selecting and packing in a box will actually reach someone in their home who is desperately ill. And so there is an advantage, certainly, to both. We need the donations. We need the financial support. But we also want people here to understand the dimensions of the problem.
Let our listeners know why you're in this, back in your home country now, and for how long.
Well, every fifth year, we return to the U.S. and spend some time, generally about 9 or 10 months, going around and speaking to churches and to groups that are involved or are interested in mission work, the work of the church internationally. And that's why I'm here in Champaign-Urbana today, in fact.
Did the whole family come, all your 8 children?
In fact, our 3 oldest children are in university now here in the States. The 5 younger ones are with us in the States during this time as well, but they did not come up to Champaign-Urbana.
Now, how can a mission coworker and spouse find the money to have 3 children in college?
Well, fortunately, one is in a state school in North Carolina, and where we have residency, and one of the others is on a wonderful scholarship, academic scholarship.
Where?
At Davidson College, and there in North Carolina as well. The third one is, in fact, taking a semester out and doing training in EMT, an emergency medical technician training, this semester.
We're talking with Frank Dimmock, who is a mission co-worker for the Presbyterian Church, who works with health issues in Eastern and Southern Africa. How many different countries, Frank? You listed them earlier.
Well, there's about 8 or 9, okay. Some of them more regularly than others. I've been spending much more time in Ethiopia and Sudan of late.
Recently. Listeners who would like to ask a question or make a comment may call us in Champaign-Urbana. The number is 333-9455. Elsewhere, 1-800-222-9455. And let me let the listeners know that on this particular day, we're still at the time when the power on this station drops at sundown. And if you missed the last part of this program over the air, remember that you can find it if you have access to a computer by going to WILL.UIUC.EDU. And you can hear it live on the computer. It's broadcast at that location, and it's also archived there. So if you're driving now and would like to hear the end of this program at a later time, when you get to your computer, it'll be up in a week or so, and WILL.UIUC.EDU, and then go to AM 580, Keeping the Faith, and you'll see Frank Dimmock's name in this program, and it'll be able to be found there for some time to come. So our programs are available that way if you lose the signal here or if you get tempted away by some football game or something. All right. We have another caller on line number 1. Yes, go right ahead. You're on the air.
I wonder, Mr. Dimmick, I wonder if you could tell us something about the various Christian organizations, churches, denominations, and so forth in Malawi, both those that are basically native churches and those that are missionary outreaches of various American groups. And in describing those churches, if you could tell us something about their strengths and weaknesses in terms of Christian witness, I'd appreciate that.
So, what are some of the churches that are active in your area?
Well, Malawi is a country of nearly 13 million people, and just under 2 million of the under 3 million of those, about 2.8 million, are Presbyterian. The Presbyterian Church there is linked with the Church of Scotland initially. There is also the Catholic Church, which is quite strong. Probably the largest church, in fact, in the country is the Catholic Church. Seventh-day Adventist Church, the Baptist Church, the Anglican Church, the Methodist Church, and the Lutheran Church are all present throughout Malawi in much smaller numbers. There is also a growing evangelical and Pentecostal movement, mostly independent churches, that are growing in numbers throughout Malawi. Malawi is reportedly about 80% Christian and about 12 to 15% Muslim, and a very small number of animists and non-believers. So there is a large Christian presence throughout Malawi. Many of these Protestant denominations, in fact, and the Catholic Church as well, are do work together ecumenically. In the area of health care, health and development, there is what's called the Christian Health Association of Malawi that provides about 40% of all the health services in the country. And that is a combination of Catholic and Presbyterian and Seventh-day and Anglican health services working together.
And you say they provide about 80% of the health services in the country?
No, about 40%.
40%, I'm sorry.
Yeah, close to 40% of the health services. The Muslims do not have much in the way of health work in Malawi, but they do have madrasas and Muslim schools. So there's a large role for the faith groups throughout the country. There are also other international faith organizations involved in Malawi doing relief and development work, World Vision, Compassion International, Samaritan's Purse. There are a number of smaller groups that are engaged at local levels throughout the country doing various projects and programs.
Since you're back in this country for 9 or 10 months, how well educated are people in the United States about the situation in Africa? They may have heard that there's a problem with AIDS. Are people knowledgeable?
Well, what I'm hearing in this country is that the news from Africa is not good. Most of that information is coming through the media and through reports of conflict and poverty and HIV/AIDS and corruption and so forth. And I think it's not fair. I think there is a more balanced picture from Africa. There are very positive things happening. And there are African programs and institutions and organizations that are responding to some of those very issues. And I think more information and more publicity needs to be given to the success stories as well.
I want to ask you about some of those success stories in just a moment, but we're about halfway through our program. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs here on WILL AM 580, a radio service of the College of Communications of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, a listener-supported service, of course. Public radio appreciates the financial support of its listeners, and that enables us to continue to bring you these locally produced programs like Keeping the Faith, and on the media, and Focus 580 and Afternoon Magazine and many others. I'm a volunteer on this program. I'm not paid. I'm a volunteer who's, for the last 7 years or so, have been helping with this program, trying to give people an opportunity to hear about some of the issues of religion and ethics and values and spirituality that are so important in this time. Coming up on Keeping the Faith, next week we'll be talking with an executive minister from the American Baptist Church, Larry Greenfield. He'll be talking about his support for state tax reform. The next three Sundays on Keeping the Faith, February 18, 25, and March 4, we're doing a series on the Gospel of St. John in the New Testament and its use by J.S. Bach in his St. John's Passion, wonderful piece of music. And we're going to be talking with Professor Michael Shapiro about whether the text for this St. John's Passion is anti-Semitic on February 25 with Professor Rick Layton, who is a professor of New Testament at the University of Illinois in the Program for the Study of Religion, about the Passion story in the Gospel, and with Professor Chet Alwes from the School of Music, who will be directing a performance of Bach's St. John's Passion on March 17 here in Champaign-Urbana. Those are some of the programs coming up ahead. We have a special treat on Palm Sunday. I'll mention that, April 1st. We'll be talking live by phone to Pastor John Sutherland, who is on the West Bank in a Palestinian area of Israel, helping with Lutheran church there on the West Bank. So that'll be exciting on Palm Sunday to hear about what Palm Sunday is like in that part of the Holy Land. We have another caller waiting. I'll get to that call in just one moment, but let me remind listeners that this program is supported in part by the University YMCA here at the University of Illinois, which is the oldest Christian ministry on this campus. It was founded in 1873, and for many decades, the Y has been open not only to Christians, but to people from any faith or of no faith, and involves students and programs of service, tutoring, volunteer service. We have community classes that are starting up again this semester, of classes in all kinds of interesting issues. Go to our website to find out about those, or stop by and pick up a pamphlet for community for this spring. The Y is located at 1001 South Wright. You can call us at 337-1500. Two of our lectures this week, February 6th, this Tuesday, we have a panel. Imani Bazell from the Urban League and Bishop from the Library and Information Science School, Rochelle Gutierrez from Curriculum and Instruction, and Doug Johnson from Landscape Architecture, talking about the Great Campus Project, which provides links between the university, the Urban League, several other agencies, the Chancellor's Task Force on Civic Commitment, and working with important educational issues. Panel discussing that at the Y this Tuesday at noon. That's February 6th. A free lecture. You can get lunch there or bring lunch with you. And then February 9, Friday, Eboo Patel will be our guest speaking at Friday Forum. He'll also be on David Inge's Focus 580. I believe it's that same day, yes. Friday at 10 o'clock here on AM 580, David Inge will be talking with Eboo Patel. He's a Muslim and the founder and executive director of the Interfaith Youth Corps. Fascinating man. He has a wonderful story to tell. He's a great speaker. Do come hear him at the Y if you can't do that. Hear him at 10 o'clock here on WILL with David Inge. That's February 9. Sorry to keep our caller waiting on line number one, but you're on the air now.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a question. This is not related to missionary work directly, but I wanted to know your thoughts about, we had a lot of news here in the States about Oprah Winfrey opening a leadership school for girls in South Africa, and I wondered what your feelings were about that sort of those sorts of projects. If you think it's going to help, you know, with development and education and in other parts, and would you like to see that, you know, spread across Africa. There's another entertainer, a tennis player, who's going to start a school in Senegal. I don't know if she's decided on the gender or not, but I just wondered what your thoughts were.
Appreciate the question. Thank you very much.
Right. I think I only became familiar with Oprah's program after coming here to the U.S., in fact, but I know that there are a number of initiatives to try and build schools and to enable children to receive an education. And I'm convinced that education is really a key to the future for many of Africa's children, and I'm very much in favor of trying to support education. I think building a sort of an elite school may not be the best approach, but in fact trying to support existing public schools and school efforts in many countries is more the answer. There are so many children that need education. There are certain areas within sub-Saharan Africa where 40% or more of the children above age 7 are not in school. And I think we need to target those areas and provide the basic education, at least primary education, accessible to all children. And that is really going to be accomplished through trying to support and encourage public schools and local schools, government schools, and church-related schools in rural areas.
Caller, did you want to follow up on that?
Thank you very much.
Appreciate the question. Thank you. Let me just defend elite schools for a minute with at least a possible question. Isn't there a lack of opportunity for the best and brightest who might provide leadership in the future in terms of education locally? Doesn't this meet a need for the best?
Well, I think that's true. I think there is a need for a balance, however. I think it's a both-and situation rather than either-or. And given that resources are limited, we need to be very careful about allocating those resources to reach the majority. And certainly there is a need to provide higher education, to provide specialist education to some who show that commitment and that promise. But I think there are huge numbers of children who lack basic education, and that needs to be a priority.
I can't resist saying this since my daughter went there too. Isn't Davidson a school for the elite?
I guess so. It's a good Presbyterian school, and my father went there, and my father-in-law went there, and we have a long family tradition of going to Davidson, and it happened to have one of the best programs that my daughter was interested in. Mm-hmm. So,
but you went to North Carolina State.
That's right. I went to a state school.
A state school. So. We're talking with Frank Dimmock, who is a mission co-worker for the Presbyterian Church and has been in Africa, 22 years from your first time there, I guess? You came back and went to grad school and all, but been there over 20 years. Tell us some of the other concerns you have with health in Africa right now for the region of Eastern Southern Africa besides HIV/AIDS, which we talked about earlier.
Well, one of the things that I've been talking about with the group today is poverty and the destitution and chronic poverty, extreme poverty that exists throughout much of the region, which affects not only health status but education and productivity, economy as well. And I think that all of these challenges are interrelated, certainly, and HIV/AIDS among them. But in addition to the challenges of HIV/AIDS, I think we need to address poverty, as many of the world leaders and celebrities are also saying. We need to look at issues of hygiene and water, availability of clean drinking water. Much of the continent is without that. And again, I mentioned education as a priority.
You mentioned the clean water being necessary for public health, of course. And in this region, we've heard on this program a couple times from the Marion Medical Mission, which has been helping provide shallow wells with access to clean, safe water for several years. What kind of an impact has that had from your perspective?
It's had a tremendous impact, and I've been in Malawi during that decade that the Marion Medical Mission have been supporting the shallow wells program throughout much of northern Malawi, as well as eastern Zambia and southern Tanzania. Providing clean drinking water to rural populations has made a huge difference in the incidence of diarrheal disease and skin infections, and has really improved the health in general, I think, of the population. We don't have any hard research data to necessarily support that, but a lot of anecdotal evidence.
Can you tell if the survival of small children improves when there's clean access to that kind of water?
Absolutely. And in fact, I think the access to clean water has reduced infant and child mortality. Again, anecdotally, but it's been clear that the cases of diarrheal disease, both outpatient and inpatient, in our hospitals has gone down.
For people who would like to make a contribution to the kind of work that you do in public health and the work of some of these other churches that are doing similar things, providing the work through the Christian Health Association in that part of Africa, how many people make a contribution who want to do something here locally but also do something internationally?
Well, there's several things that people here can and should do. First is to pray and to continue to support the work there, to remain informed. And in terms of contributions, there are methods through our denomination, through the Presbyterian Church, what's called extra commitment opportunities. There are accounts there for supporting the AIDS work, for supporting shallow wells. I think Marion Medical Mission has an account there. There is an account for health consulting for Southern Africa, which supports my work, the expenses that I incur with travel and training and so forth.
Now, what's that called again?
It's Extra Commitment Opportunities, ECO, it's known as. And if a person were to access the Presbyterian Church USA website, they could follow the menu to Extra Commitment Opportunities. And the number that supports my work is 047974, and that's labeled Health Consulting in Southern Africa. And there are a number of other, there are over 200 extra commitment opportunities available for specific things.
And what is the Presbyterian Church website?
www.pcusa.org.
PCUSA.org.
Mm-hmm.
And then extra commitment opportunities.
There's a whole range of links from that main homepage that a person can access what's taking place. You can look at mission co-worker information. You can look at countries around the world where the denomination is working, and certainly some of these health issues.
How has the Internet helped people learn about places far away that before it took a real effort to learn anything? Has it made a difference in what mission co-workers can do?
Well, I think it has increased awareness in those areas where people have access to Internet, North America and Europe in particular. We have very little access to the Internet yet in much of Africa. We have email accounts that we can sometimes access very slow speeds. I think one of the most striking things in coming back to this country is the technology gap and the speed at which things are changing in terms of information technology. And it's something that one becomes very accustomed to here
sure.
with high speeds. I think it is a method for us to try and provide information on what's happening over there.
There's still time for people to call in with comments or questions for our guest, Frank Dimmock, who's talking with us about health issues in East and Southern Africa. In Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Elsewhere, toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. Frank, when you and the children you've been raising, that you've adopted, you and your wife have adopted, eight of them now, are in Africa, what do they miss from their times here when they've come with you every 5 years to this country? Is it technology? What do they miss? What have they given up?
It's interesting. Along about year three or four, they seem a bit anxious to return to the U.S., to come to the U.S., mostly to see family and some friends that they've kept up with, to watch the latest movies and to eat chocolate and a few things like that. But they find that after a month or 6 weeks of being here in this country, they miss Africa. Mm-hmm. And in fact, they're ready to go back. It's difficult for them to communicate to their friends in Africa, and they miss the simple life and being able to play football, soccer, barefoot with their friends.
And what do you miss about Africa when you're here?
Oh, I miss the people. Oh. Certainly, as we talked about earlier, the hospitality and the friendliness of the African people that we work with day in and day out, the inspiration of their faith and how they live their faith in their daily lives and work is, we miss that.
When you said you first had a call, felt a call to go to Africa, there may be students listening and others who wonder what that's like. Did you hear voices?
Well, I'm glad you've asked that question, because I especially want to talk to university students. I had recently graduated from college when that happened to me, and I was trying to discern what it was that I was going to do with the rest of my life. I was in church on one Sunday, and it was more of a feeling than voices, but it was a very strong feeling that I had that I was being asked, called to serve. And I really had a lot of questions then in my mind as to what that meant in terms of where I would go, what I would do, would I be able to do anything? So I began to ask some of those questions of people who put me in touch with the program of the church.
We have another caller waiting on line number one. You're on Keeping the Faith with our guest, Frank Dimmock.
I found this conversation very, very interesting, because I think many people in this country want to know how we can relate to the tragedies that are reported in Africa and other parts of the world. The question I have in my mind is that, do you know Grace Malindi? Grace and her husband and family were here in Urbana for years and have many friends here. And Grace's work is headed out as a government official, as I understand it. Does Mr. Dimmock know her and know of the work that she's doing since she got her doctorate here?
Thanks for that question. Grace is a very special woman and a dear friend. We have been living in Lilongwe, Malawi, in the capital city, for the last 8 years. And I've gotten to know Grace, and before Ellard, her husband, passed away, Ellard as well, and their family. Tremendous servants, civil servants of the government of Malawi. And we try and stay in touch with Grace because she is sort of an advisor consultant to our programs to provide intensive gardening in rural areas to try and improve food security.
Did you want to follow up, caller?
I think that's very, very helpful, and it's interesting that higher education opportunity here equips a native of Malawi to be useful and to be related to the other agencies that are there to serve. Keep up the good work.
Thank you for the call. The University of Illinois here in Urbana-Champaign has over 5,000 international students, mostly graduate students from all over the world who come here, many in the Department of Engineering and Agriculture, but of course all of the fields, many of whom then return home and are leaders in their respective countries. Have you seen other examples of that in the countries that you oversee?
Absolutely, and I think it's a tremendous gift to the developing world. Certainly the countries I've been in Africa have benefited from having their students train in the U.S. or in the U.K. or in Europe to gain those skills that they can use back in their home countries.
I can't resist pointing out that the University YMCA, where I work, began the program with international students, welcoming them here over 100 years ago on this campus, and conducted it by itself for many decades. And then the university saw the need of that and established its own department helping with international students.
Let me just add that I think it's a wonderful gift of hospitality for people in this area to welcome these international students and to accept them and to help them as they culturally adjust to life in America and the demands of school here.
We have another caller on line number two. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Could you possibly provide some information on how people can support malaria initiatives in Africa or in a specific community?
Yes, thank you for that question. In fact, we have focused earlier in this session on HIV/AIDS, but in fact, malaria is the number one killer of children in Malawi and throughout much of the region. And it's the number one cause of hospitalization among the adult population. So malaria, which is preventable, is still a major, major health challenge throughout much of Africa. There are a number of initiatives to try and combat malaria, providing insecticide-treated bed nets for people to sleep under, providing artemether combined therapy for treatment of malaria, and more recently, some insecticide spraying by the use of DDT and other chemicals to try and reduce the habitat of the mosquito. These are all very important initiatives, and you can support those initiatives in a variety of ways. There are extra commitment opportunities through the Presbyterian Church to support malaria programs in Africa. And otherwise, I would encourage you to go on the Internet and do a search.
For those who might not have, who joined us later and may not have gotten the information on how to learn about extra commitment opportunities through the Presbyterian Church, which supports Mr. Dimmock, you can go to a website, PCUSA, PresbyterianChurchUSA.org, and then look for extra commitment opportunities or look for certain countries and then malaria relief. The Health Consulting in South Africa service that Frank Dimmock works with, there's a certain number you might take note of. That's 047974 is the way to make a particular contribution to Health Consulting in South Africa, provided that he helps provide. We have just a couple minutes left. Frank, yes, you started to say something.
Well, I was going to add concerning the malaria, there is a program called Networkers, which was started by Presbyterian women in this country to provide the resources for providing bed nets for the African population. And that's also accessible through that website, Networkers.
In this community, Networkers refers to supporters of the basketball team, but it'll be easy to remember that way.
Right?
Thank you. We're down just the last couple of minutes. Frank, what have been the most satisfying things for you as you look back on your decades in Africa?
Well, there's several important lessons that I think I've learned over the last 25 years, and certainly one of the real blessings that I take away from my career in Africa is the relationships that I have been able to form with Africans in Malawi and other countries as well. The personal relationships and spending time with people, I think, is the greatest legacy.
And regrets?
Very few regrets. I mean, there have been some personal challenges with illness, with malaria and so forth. But in general, we have been blessed. We've been safe and secure. Our family has been blessed. Children have been educated, and we've been able to work with brothers and sisters across Africa in a variety of ways, in which I think have been very helpful.
And in terms of any words that we're beginning to say to current students at the university who might be looking at possible career paths?
Please consider missions. It's not something that you get much focus through career guidance programs generally, but it is a career path that I think is tremendously rewarding. It provides wonderful opportunities cross-culturally for travel, for understanding anthropology and cultures of different countries, and working alongside people to help them help themselves against these challenges.
And you began by volunteering right after your college graduation and then came back to graduate school with a specific end in mind.
Exactly. I think it really helped for me to focus my graduate work after taking that time out, sort of a gap year kind of idea, to have that experience and to then focus on public health as opposed to medicine, where I was headed.
And there are many, many places where volunteers internationally can have that experience.
There are. Certainly they're both faith opportunities as well as secular opportunities through Peace Corps and other such programs. But I would encourage university students to look into that if you're at all interested.
Our guest on Keeping the Faith this week has been Frank Dimmock, who is a mission co-worker. Has been dealing with health issues in East and Southern Africa through the Presbyterian Church, United States of America. Native North Carolinian, a graduate of North Carolina State University, and then did graduate work at Tulane and University of North Carolina. We thank our callers. Next week on Keeping the Faith, we'll be talking with Larry Greenfield, who is the executive minister for the American Baptist Church in Chicago, and he'll be talking about the need for state tax reform here in Illinois. February 18, our guest will be Michael Shapiro, talking about St. John's Passion and the whole question of whether it is anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish. My name is Steve Shoemaker. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Everybody gets excited about whatever's new, but what about what's really, really old? I'm Tim Fleming. Next time, under the best of our knowledge, we'll commemorate geologic time. We'll meet the crew who found the oldest object on Earth, a 3.4-billion-year-old zircon. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 on WILL Urbana. AM 580 has a listener comment line. If you'd like to comment on something you hear on the Information Advantage, call 217-333-0853 and leave a message. That's 217-333-0853. A wind chill advisory is in effect until noon tomorrow for the Champaign-Urbana area. Tonight, clear with a low around 5 below. Northwest winds 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour this evening, then decreasing to around 10 miles per hour overnight. Wind chill down to 20 below zero. Tomorrow, sunny but bitterly cold with a high around 9 degrees. Northwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour with wind chill down to 25 below. This is WILL Urbana.